This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, and here's what's coming up.
The real heroes are the thousands of the people of Uganda that have paid the ultimate price in the struggle for freedom and democracy.
That's Ugandan singer-turned-politician Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, popularly known as Bobi Wine, on the Oscar nomination for a documentary about him. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken stresses economic ties and technology while visiting Lagos. And former U.S. President Donald Trump has won the New Hampshire primary election. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Today in Nigeria, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken stressed economic ties as well as international cooperation between the United States and Nigeria. In Lagos, Blinken voiced hope for greater U.S. investment in Nigeria, but called on Africa's largest economy to reassure investors that they can repatriate their funds. He toured the city, where he visited a complex of IT startups and inaugurated a new U.S. space showcasing American technology. Hailing Nigerian ingenuity, Blinken said the U.S. has a growing interest in investing in Nigeria. However, he pointed out challenges many foreign companies encounter, such as the lengthy process of repatriating capital, as well as Nigeria's problem with corruption. Yesterday, in comments in Lagos, Blinken stressed the potential of economic development on the African continent.
The future really is with Africa. It's no secret to anyone that in the coming years, one in four inhabitants of this planet will be from this continent. And so we would ignore Africa at our peril. But we also see the incredible power in these partnerships in actually solving problems together. And when we're thinking about Africa, Nigeria has to be front and center. The largest country, the largest economy, the largest democracy. It is a natural partner.
Blinken met with Nigerian President Bola Tinubu yesterday, where, among other things, they discussed regional security issues and a series of military coups in West African nations over the past few years. Later, at a news conference with Nigerian Foreign Minister Yusuf Tuggar, Blinken again stressed U.S. collaboration with Nigeria in a variety of areas.
And we are doing a lot of work together already to drive in a positive direction. We're driving climate action. As partners in the Global Methane Coalition, we're pushing for permanent representation for African voices in the UN Security Council, in other international organizations that need to reflect the realities of today, not just the day that they were created many, many years ago. We're working and collaborating to support the development and use of artificial intelligence for good. With 30 other Atlantic countries, we're driving blue economic development, environmental protection, science and technology exchange through a new partnership for Atlantic cooperation.
Blinken began his trip with a visit to Cape Verde on Monday and then went on to Ivory Coast. He wraps up the trip with a stop in Angola. Israel said today that its troops carried out airstrikes and ground attacks in northern, central and southern Gaza, while the UN chief warned of the heartbreaking and catastrophic effects of the war on Palestinian civilians. A U.S. envoy's visit to the region included discussion of a potential new temporary ceasefire. The Israeli military released a videos of its actions that included the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, where fighting has grown more intense in recent weeks, and Israel said it had encircled the area. An Israeli military warning told people in parts of northern Khan Yunis to evacuate, the latest such order that Israel says is meant to protect civilians from the fighting. But with the war moving further south and nearly all of the population having fled their homes, there are fewer and fewer safe places for civilians to go. The White House said Tuesday that Middle East envoy Brett McGurk was in Cairo as part of the latest efforts to secure a temporary ceasefire that would include mechanisms for releasing hostages held by Hamas in Gaza, as well as freeing Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Meanwhile, continuing retaliatory attacks and targeted assassinations along the Lebanon-Israel border are prompting warnings of an escalation that could unleash a wider conflict in the region. For VOA, Del Gavlak reports from Amman.
Lebanon's Iran-backed Hezbollah militia said it targeted Israel's Northern Army Command, Mount Moran base, Tuesday, its second such attack on the post in recent days. Later Tuesday, Israeli warplanes fired missiles at Lebanon's southern districts of Bin Jebel, Nabatea, and Iqlim al-Tufah, destroying homes and wounding several people, Lebanon's national news agency reported. The border skirmishes have forced citizens on both sides to move further inland for safety. Lebanon's caretaker foreign minister, Abdullah Abu Habib, in remarks to the Council on Foreign Relations in New York this week, linked the retaliatory aerial bombings to the war in Gaza.
It is minor fighting, and I don't think the intention is to have a big war. It has to do also with what's going on in Gaza. What's going on in Gaza is not acceptable Arab-wise, it's not acceptable world-wise.
However, analyst Dania Khulia Khati points to Israel's increasing use of targeted assassinations of Hezbollah and Hamas leaders in Lebanon, like Wissam At-Tawil and Saleh Arouri, as potential triggers for a wider conflict with Hezbollah. Khati, president of the Research Center for Cooperation and Peace Building in Beirut, told VOA Hezbollah is poking Israel, but it doesn't want an escalation. However, she says, an escalation can happen if the U.S. does not rein in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
I think the Israeli army doesn't want to go to Lebanon because they know they cannot win. They can destroy Beirut. They cannot remove Hezbollah. But I see it escalating unless there is U.S. pressure.
Professor Filippo Dionigi of the University of Bristol in Britain told the France 24 TV network that Israel's targeted assassinations have gone beyond the rules of engagement, opening the possibility to a greater escalation.
The other possibility is error, is overshooting, is involving civilians to an extent that is greater than that already involved in, that can create unwanted consequences on both sides of the conflict, and therefore open the possibility to a greater escalation, even the possibility of an all-out war, which is something that Israel has been threatening clearly, and Hezbollah too has responded with the same tone to that kind of threat.
Other observers say that Lebanon's dire economic crisis means there's little appetite for war with Israel, and Hezbollah would risk a significant public backlash. Tobias Bork, a researcher at the Royal United Services Institute in London, warned in Britain's Mail Online, as the Gaza war continues, "I think the risk of something going wrong compounds the longer this goes on." Del Gavlak, VOA News, Amman.
South African police say they have arrested a man accused of starting a fire that killed more than 70 people in Johannesburg last year. The 29-year-old was detained on Tuesday after confessing his involvement before an inquiry established to investigate the tragedy. 77 people were killed and scores injured as a blaze ripped through a five-story building taken over for illegal housing in central Johannesburg last August. The French news agency AFP says the suspect is expected to appear in court soon on charges of arson, 76 counts of murder, and 120 counts of attempted murder. Illegal occupation of disused buildings in the city is widespread, with many said to be under the control of criminal syndicates who collect rent from occupants. You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. A documentary about Ugandan singer-turned-politician Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, popularly known as Bobi Wine, has received a nomination at the 2024 Oscars. Titled The People's President, the film has been selected alongside The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Mariupol under the Best Documentary Feature. The nomination comes 11 days after the documentary won the Audience Choice Award at the esteemed Cinema Eye Honors 2024 Awards held on January 12th at the New York Academy of Medicine in East Harlem. Earlier, I reached Kyagulanyi for his reaction to this nomination.
Yeah, we are very humbled to see our Ugandan story making it to such a huge global platform. For us, it has always been our effort to highlight our plight to the international stage. It would help us to convince those that fund the regime in Uganda to reconsider or at least to put stringent conditions, including respect for human rights and respect for democracy. There's no other way that we would raise our voice than bringing our voice to the Oscars, one of the most prestigious platforms in the world. So we hope this will have an impact and create more awareness of our struggle in Uganda.
To those who are not familiar with your documentary, The People's President, what motivated you to do this documentary and what does it tell the world?
Well, the director heard about my story and he thought it was interesting. So when he requested that he film myself, my wife and my comrades up close, I said yes to it. For us, it was an opportunity to invite the world into our struggle for freedom in Uganda.
What do you hope to achieve from this? What do you think, what are your expectations from this documentary?
We hope to elevate our voice further and we hope to ask the world to join our hope and our desperate cry for freedom, for human rights and for democracy in Uganda. We know that our plight is decided in big capitals like Washington and Europe. We hope to invite them to the real plight, uncensored, unedited, of the people of Uganda, and hopefully they can help us reverse it for the better of the future generations. I would like to add that in this film, myself and my wife, we are not the real heroes. The real heroes are the thousands of the people of Uganda that have paid the ultimate price in the struggle for freedom and democracy. The real heroes are those missing comrades, the political prisoners, and there are millions of the people of Uganda that turned out and always turn out to support us and encourage us and remind us never to give up. I salute them, and I hope we are representing them perfectly on the global platform.
That was Uganda's operational leader, Bobi Wine. I reached him earlier by phone from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. I also reached Okello Oryem, Uganda's Minister of Foreign Affairs, for his reaction.
My only comment is this, that Western countries are so gullible to everything and anything that anybody that talks negatively against the government of the day institutions. And the government, Western countries, spend more time trying to support people who are against elected or the legal institutions of the day. And whatever that those groups tell the Western government, even the worst of lies, the most misleading of information, the Western countries and their viewers are so gullible to these stories that, their legs go waxy and wobbly to the, such stories. So I wish them all the very best. But for us in Uganda, the facts speak for itself. And Uganda, and in spite all that they throw at Uganda, which are misleading, Uganda has managed to prove them wrong.
That was Henry Okello Oryem, Uganda's Minister of Foreign Affairs. A Kenyan journalist is running a publication which exclusively reports on issues affecting women. Her publication, Women Kenya Network, is aimed at to helping women to tell their stories in a society that they say downplays their issues. Victoria Muga reports from Nairobi.
Nairobi-based journalist Queen Tambori was chief sub-editor of a tabloid in a local media house. The 10-year veteran says she found the tabloid's style of reporting on women disturbing because women were sexualized and misrepresented.
This bothered me for a very long time, and I even had, discussions here and there. Then I realized I could not fight 7 editors, because more often than not, when you are caught up in an argument over, say, a misrepresentation of women, I would lose.
In 2020, Mbori took action and founded Woman Kenya Network, a website on which reporters file stories exclusively on women.
We ensure that our stories are gender sensitive, We ensure that the stories are gender transformative. It's not just about, you know, looking at balance and looking at, you know, novelty and looking at human interest and looking at, you know, the usual, the five W's. No, we go beyond that. We want to look at solutions. We want to look at human aspect. We want to look at impact.
At least 10 journalists are employed here, reporting on subjects ranging from business, innovation, climate change, and reproductive health. A 2022 report by Oxford University found that women are largely underrepresented in news coverage and portrayed in stereotypical and simplistic ways. So Kenya's Association of Media Women is championing more female representation in reporting through partnerships. Jen Thuo is the association's chairperson.
We also used to partner with UN Women to see how, as an organization, we can have sensitization workshops for women in leadership on how they can take advantage of media, be it social media or mainstream media, to profile themselves in politics. In addition, we've held several trainings for journalists, both male and female, for including senior editors, engaging them on the need to be gender sensitive.
Indigenous women have an even harder time getting their stories told, according to a grassroots women-led community organization, Groots Kenya. Coordinator Pacifica Ongecha told VOA that it's because a majority cannot speak English or Swahili, the languages preferred by the media.
Engage this woman where she belongs. They have the content. If it means this person speaks in Luya, engage them in the Luya language in Western Kenya. If this person speaks in Luo, engage them in the Luo dialect where this person belongs. And I'm sure all of them, most of them, will have some content of what they have gone through.
Kenya has made significant strides in promoting gender equality, according to a recent World Bank report, but there is still work to be done. Journalists like Mbori believe that publications like Woman Kenya Network will bring more success stories about women to the public eye. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
New Hampshire voters gave decisive wins to candidates Tuesday in one of the first votes leading to the 2024 presidential election. VOA's Karen Presutti is in Nashua, New Hampshire, to bring us the winners and losers and what it means looking ahead to the next contest in South Carolina.
Voters in New Hampshire Tuesday propelled former President Donald Trump closer to the Republican nomination. Coming off a first-place finish in the Iowa caucuses, he now has a New Hampshire win. In his victory speech, he sounded as if he had moved on to November.
We have beaten Biden. I think we called it right. Immigration's a big deal. A big deal.
His voters never wavered. Chris Compass has voted for Donald Trump in every election.
I lay my life down for that man.
This race is far from over. There are dozens of states left to go.
Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley narrowed the gap with Trump thanks to the state's independent voters, like Jessica Minasian.
Like most of us, we're just looking for another option, someone to come in and, like I said, because we've been divided and we want to bring everybody together and just be Americans.
I asked Donald Trump Jr. about those voters as he arrived to greet volunteers.
We've talked to independents in line and they've said that they're going for Haley. What do you say to them?
They're not independents, they're Democrats.
The Democrats had their own worries. Write-in Biden signs seemed to be growing in the tiny town of Plymouth. Because of a National Democratic Party calendar change, the president's name was not on the ballot, but he still won handily.
We'll see you on the trail.
From here, all eyes move south for the next state primary. Chris Gaudieri is a political science professor at St. Anselm College.
For Trump, South Carolina represents an opportunity to show that he can defeat one of his opponents, Nikki Haley, on her own home turf.
Not if the former South Carolina governor gets her way. Haley's next campaign event starts in South Carolina in less than 24 hours. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Nashua, New Hampshire.
More than 37% of the world's population still has no reliable access to the internet due to cost and lack of infrastructure, according to the International Telecommunications Union, a UN agency for information and communication technologies. However, an organization like the Open Foundation for West Africa in Ghana aims to change that by providing open education and education programs through its popular wireless software program, KiWix. Ruby Damashia Brown, a senior program officer at the foundation, spoke with VOA's Paul Ondiho via Skype.
Let's start by you telling us a little bit about this fascinating program that you're working on, the KiWix. So what is it all about?
I work with Open Foundation West Africa as a programs manager. And one of the projects that we do at Open Foundation West Africa is the KiWix for School project. It's a software that allows you to access online educational materials, videos, content, and usually anything that you would find online that you need to connect the internet to, you can get it offline, okay, using KiWix. So basically, that's what KiWix enables you to do. I found the tool very useful because of where we are in Africa, looking at the terrain where we live, looking at the internet penetration rate in Africa, we still realize that some people are offline. Internet penetration rate in Africa is about 58%, roughly. It's not even up to 60%. A lot of people are offline. Even with those that are connected on the internet, we realize that there's still challenges.
You talked about how this is an offline tool that you can access anytime, meaning that for the average person, somebody in a remote place in Ghana can access this program?
Yes, because most of the people in the remote areas, in rural areas, don't have internet. Most of the people cannot afford internet bundles. Teachers are not able to do research. Students are not able to access these rich content that we have online, complementary educational resources that are accessible online. And so what we do is that when we install KiWix on this computer lab, they are coming with educational content that usually are found online. We zip these files and then make it available on a KiWix reader that makes everyone or anyone who is using the computer to be able to browse the websites that have been put on the KiWix, just like you're browsing the internet. It allows you to do that. So you click here, you go here, you know, it gives you like that feel of browsing on the internet. Meanwhile, you're not using data bundle, you're not using any of those things, okay? So it's sort of like bridge that gap.
How big is e-learning in Ghana?
E-learning has taken a different shape in Ghana, even though we were not prepared. One of the things that we bumped into when the pandemic happened is that we were not prepared for it, but then we have to do it. Even now that the pandemic has, you know, subsided, we are still seeing e-learning happening. A lot of people are doing courses online. So I think it's just come to stay.
How many schools have you been able to connect with this software?
We've reached about 40 schools. I think three schools in outside Ghana. Through our KiWix for School Africa Mentorship Program, we were able to pilot a project in Nigeria, in Congo, in, I think, in Tanzania as well. And in Ghana, we've been to about 7 regions in Ghana and still counting. So all in total, we've reached about 40 schools.
What is it going to take for Africans, young Africans like you, maybe to create solutions for some of the most pressing challenges that we have on the continent?
I think Africa has just so many challenges. And in as much as there's so many challenges, there are a lot of solutions that are out there that we can leverage on. We need to embrace technology as much as possible because technology is solving a lot of the problems that we see, and our ability to explore, embrace it, you know, learn new technology, learn new things to be able to.
That was Rabbi Damisha Brown, a senior program officer at Open Foundation West Africa, speaking with my colleague Paul Ndiho. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Edrius Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.